पुष्णातीयान् अधारमेन स्वबुद्ध्याथाम् अफण्डिताम् हे कृतार्थं प्रहिन्वन्ति प्राणराया सुधादया पुष्णातीयान् अधारमेन स्वबुद्ध्याथाम् अफण्डिताम् हे कृतार्थं प्रहिन्वन्ति प्राणराय सुधादया पुष्णातीयान् अधारमेन स्वबुद्ध्याथाम् अफण्डिताम् हे कृतार्थं प्रहिन्वन्ति प्राणराय सुधादया Pushnati nourishes yan, which things adharmena by sinful activity, svabuddhya, thinking them to be his own, tam, him, apanditam, uneducated, te, they, akrita artham, his purpose is frustrated, prahinvanti, abandon, prana, life air, rayaha, wealth, sutta, adhaya, children and others. A fool indulges in sin to maintain his life, wealth, and children, and other relatives, for he thinks, these things are mine. In the end, however, these very things all abandon him, leaving him frustrated. Purport. In these verses, Akrura is giving rather frank advice to Dhritarashtra. Those who know the story of the Mahabharata will realize how relevant and prophetic these instructions are, and how much Dhritarashtra suffered for not accepting them. Although one tenaciously clings to his property, in the end, all is lost, and the blundering soul is swept away by the wheel of birth and death. Swayam kilabisham adaya Tastyakto naratako vidata asiddhartho visatyandham sudharavanukhastamaha. Abandoned by his so-called dependents, ignorant of the actual goal of life, indifferent to his real duty, and having failed to fulfill his purposes, the foolish soul enters the blindness of hell, taking his sinful reactions with him. purport. It is sadly ironic that materialistic persons who labor so assiduously to accumulate insurance, security, property, and family enter the darkness of hell equipped with nothing but the painful reactions of their sins. On the other hand, those who cultivate Krishna consciousness, spiritual life, while apparently neglecting to accumulate property, a large family, and so on, enter the next life enriched with so many spiritual assets and thus enjoy the deep pleasures of the soul. Tasma lokamimam rajan svapnamaya manoratam vikshyamam yatmanatmanam samashanto bhavo prabho. Therefore, O King, looking upon this world as a dream, a magician's illusion, or a flight of fancy, please control your mind with intelligence and become equipoised and peaceful, my Lord. Om Akyanti Mirandasya Jnananjana Chalakaya Chakshuru Militam Jena Tasmai Sri Gurupe Namaha Vanchakalpa Tharubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patithanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Ajanulambita Pujo Kanakathavato Sankirtanai Kapitaro Kamalaya Taksho Vishwambaro Dvijabaro Yugadharma Palo Bande Jagat Priyakaro Karunavataro Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nithananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasati Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 A fool indulges in sin to maintain his life, wealth, and children, and other relatives, for he thinks these things are mine. In the end, however, these very things all abandon him, leaving him frustrated. Akrura, the true well-wisher and friend of King Dhritarashtra, is herein so lovingly and compassionately on behalf of Lord Sri Krishna, instructing him in the basic principles of truth, to discriminate between what is real and what is illusory. Nashato vidyate bhavo, na bhavo vidyate shata, ubhayorapi dristantas tvanayosvata darashiti. Bhagavad Gita explains that what is real never ceases to be. It is eternal. And what is unreal has no endurance. Whatever is temporary is not truth. Truth is what is connected to Krishna. Om Purnam Ada Purnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnam Adaya Purnam Eva Avashishyate. that the absolute truth is perfect and complete. And all emanations from the absolute truth are also perfect and complete. Even in this material manifestation, whatever we see, whatever we experience, in the proper consciousness of its connection to the absolute truth, is a reality. But whatever we separate from the absolute truth, by our own ignorance, by our own exploitative nature, that is an illusion. Krishna says in Gita, when you know the truth, you will know that all things and all living beings are in me, they are of me, and they are mine. This body that we're living in, when we think this is my body, that is an illusion. Because it is not your body. Proprietorship means control. You have limited control of your body. Sometimes we get diseased, although we do not want. By the force of time, in whom Krishna explains in the Gita, is his very energy in this world, we are controlled. We are being consumed. No one wants to grow old, but we are forced to grow old. People do not want to die, but we have no choice but to succumb to death, because this body is the property of Krishna, Sarva Loka Maheshwaram. And all things that exist are the property of Krishna. Janasya moho yamaham mameti. Illusion means to think this body is me, and all things relating to this body are mine. Pung shastriya maituni bhavametam tayor mito hridaya granti mahu atho grihakshetra sutapti vitara janasya moho yamaham mameti. We think this is my children, this is my home, this is my relatives, this is my wealth and property, this is my life, this is an illusion. It is all Krishna's. When we see it is all Krishna's, and we utilize everything for Krishna, that is truth. Is this microphone truth or illusion? It is a question of our perception. In this external energy of the Lord or material existence, everything is temporary. But the principle of material existence is eternal. The energy or the external energy, Maya Shakti, is eternal. There's never been a time when Maya did not exist. Is the energy of the Lord. Ishopanishad said it is an emanation of Krishna. And everything within the realm of Maya Shakti is temporary. All living beings go through 6 transformations. First we are born, then we grow, we have some duration, we produce some offspring, we dwindle, and we die. And all living bodies within this creation have to go through these 6 transformations, because we are under the control of time, of Maya. But if we see how Mayadhyakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam Hetunani Nukonteya Jagad Viparivaratate, that this Maya potency is working under the direction of the Supreme Lord, then we understand that its nature is eternal, although manifestations are temporary. And when our consciousness can see every manifestation in its relationship to the eternal source, then our vision is no longer an illusion. It is real. It is truth. This microphone is the property of Krishna. It is under Krishna's control. Its elements may have a beginning or an end, but in its essence, it is meant for Krishna. It is of Krishna, and it is Krishna's. And when we use it for Krishna, that is truth. And when we use it independent of Krishna's desire for our own purpose, that is illusion. And that holds true with our body. This body is a temple of God. In the Vedic tradition, there's no difference between the temple and the deity in the temple. Every temple has a symbol on the top. If it is a Vishnu temple, there is the chakra. If it is a Shiva temple, there is the trident. But we know that by offering our pranams to the chakra on top of the temple, it is exactly the same as entering into the temple and offering to the deity. Why? Because that chakra represents the murti within. When Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was living in Jagannath Puri Dham, when he was entering Jagannath Puri, for the first time, he was on the outskirts and he saw the beautiful chakra on top of the Jagannath temple. He immediately bowed down, knowing that that chakra represents Jagannath. And Jagannath inside the temple is accepting the worship of one who bows down to the chakra atop the temple. And to this very day, when we go to Jagannath Puri, perhaps we will see that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, our Param Guru, personally installed footprints of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu right at the site when he first saw the chakra of Jagannath. And Srila Haridas Thakur, because he was born from a family of Malechas and Jovanas, he was not allowed to enter into the temple. They have a very strict system there, that only born Hindus and the higher castes are allowed in the temple. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Haridas, not wanting to disturb the social customs of the time, arranged so that Haridas would be living just in a garden called Siddha Bhakula, close to Jagannath Mandir, where every day, from his very hut where he would chant his 3 lakhs of Harinam every day, he could see the chakra of Jagannath temple and have the darshan of Jagannath through that form. So in the same way, this body is a temple of the Lord, because within the heart is the Paramatma. Although the body may be temporary, if we respect it as a place where only the worship of Bhagavan is taking place from within, and only the worship of Bhagavan is taking place through all of our sensual activities and our mental activities, then actually this body is spiritualized. The soul is utilizing this body in God's service. That is truth. That is not illusion. But as soon as we want to use this body for our own personal selfish enjoyments, it becomes an illusion. And it becomes the source of bondage rather than liberation. Jagyaratat kamanonyatra lokomam karma bandana taratam karma konteya mokta sanga samacharaha. That any work you perform with this body, which is done as a sacrifice of service to Bhagwan, that work is the cause of liberation. But any work we perform for any other purpose is bondage. So Akrura is explaining this to Dhritarashtra, that we only have a small amount of time within this world, in this particular lifespan. And real intelligence is to discriminate between truth and illusion and utilize our precious time for that purpose which will reap the best results. If you commit sinful activities just to maintain your senses, and your family. At any moment, this body and your family and everything you've acquired will abandon you. And what will you have left? Only the reactions to your sins. So why, Dhritarashtra? Why you are so foolish? Why you are so ignorant? You are already so old. Dhritarashtra, he was already coughing mucus. He was already blind. His limbs were already suffering due to invalidity. Death was upon him at any moment. And he was committing such abominable offenses to great souls, such sinful activities, just to maintain his son and his other children, and his wealth and his prestige. But at any moment, all these things will abandon you. And what will you have? Only the reactions to your sins. Why you do not look into the future? The great poet Govinda Das has prayed. Kamala dalal jara, sita atapa, vata sita atapa, vata varishana, hedina jamini jagire. Hedana jovana, putra parijana, iteki ache parati tire. That this wife, these children, all of these attachments I have, ultimately, due to our attachment to them, we only suffer. They cannot help us when we are most in need. They are like drops of water on a lotus leaf. They are here today, tomorrow they are gone. Bajahun harit padani tire. The only thing that has any permanence is our devotional activities in relationship to Krishna. Neha vikramanasosti pratyavayo nividyate svalpam apyasya dharmasya trayate mahatobhaya. That whatever activities were performed in the line of dharma, sanatan dharma, bhakti, it is eternal. It can never be taken away. But any activities we perform under the illusion of the bodily concept of life are simply washed away by the waves of time. So why? Why we waste our precious moments serving a dream, endeavoring to attain a mirage? In the desert, we see what appears like water, and we only have a little bit energy left in our life in the desert. We are starving. And we utilize all of that precious energy to reach a mirage. It appears like water. It appears that it will quench my thirst. But when you drink from it, all you get is a mouthful of hot, burning sand, which pains and increases the fire of your thirst. This is material life. So much precious every moment is in this human existence. And we are chasing the mirage of material existence, endeavoring for happiness, for pleasure, through various forms of sense gratification and family life. But in the end, all we get is burning misery, which comes in the form of death of our loved ones, death of our own self, and all the miseries that accompany it in the meanwhile. So therefore, a wise man performs those activities which will fructify in something auspicious. Akrura is being so kind and merciful. He's telling Dhritarashtra that you should not be under the influence of those who are trying to exploit you. And what is the greatest exploitation? If someone takes all your money and cheats you, he hasn't taken much. He's not such a bad person after all. If someone steals your wife, it's not so bad. If someone blasphemes you and steals away all your dignity and prestige within this world, not such a serious thing. If someone kidnaps all your children, or cheats you and usurps you of all your property and leaves you on the street with nothing, it's not such a bad person. But if someone leads you into the illusion of wasting your human existence and each precious moment of this human existence in pursuance of an illusion, that person has really cheated you. That person has really exploited you of the most precious possession you have, the human right to become God conscious. That person is a thief and has committed serious harm to you. But yet, such serious thieves and the most gruesome exploiters of our life, we make them our best friends. We feel so obliged to them. We do not see. Srimad Bhagavatam explains in this way that even in the form of family members, we are maintaining them so carefully and working so hard, but actually they are plunderers. They are thieves stealing away the precious energy of our human existence, which is meant for devotion to God, for their own purposes. And yet we are so attached to these thieves, so sentimental toward them. And this is the difference between Grihastha life and Grihamedi life. Grihamedi life is a life centered around envy. That everyone is envious of one another because everyone wants to be the enjoyer and the proprietor. And Grihastha life is based upon truth and love, where the husband, the wife, the children, they all recognize that we are all together for Krishna. Our life is to help one another to achieve the goal. We are not here to exploit one another. We are here to serve one another. The wife serves the husband by always encouraging him and assisting him and supporting him in his spiritual activity and his seva to Gurudev. And the husband never thinks that this wife is mine to enjoy. The husband thinks, no, this is Krishna Dasi. This is a servant of Krishna. I have no right to deal with her in any way, save and except to protect her and to assist her in her love and devotion to Krishna, and to be her partner in her love and devotion to Krishna. And our children, they are the gifts that Krishna has given to entrusting his own children in our hands. And we have no right to teach them anything that isn't what Krishna wants them to know. We must teach them how to love God, how to serve God, how to never take birth in this material world again, And my parents, they may think whatever they want, but I know that the duty of a son is he is putra. He saves his father and mother from hell by his devotional activities. So they may think what they want, but I know what is best for them, to become a pure devotee of the Lord. This is grihastha life. In this type of family life, it's as good as sannyas. It may be a different functional service, but in essence, there's no difference. Yukta vairagya. Thakur Bhakti Vinod, he had a wife and 10 children, but because he was so much immersed with all of his family members in the loving service of Krishna and spreading the holy name throughout the world together, the whole family lived. Even the greatest sannyasis and babajis, the most renounced of all the babajis at the time was Gorakishore Das Babaji. And he made his bhajan kutir for some time right in the household garden of Thakur Bhakti Vinod, where he was living with his wife and 10 children. Because Gorakishore Das Babaji saw that although this man was actually a magistrate judge, and he was a very responsible person living in a nice house, because his family and he were so Krishna conscious, Gorakishore Das Babaji considered that there was more sense of renunciation and spirituality living with this family than living with all the so-called Babajis in their bhajan kutirs, who still had material ambitions for profit, adoration, and distinction. Grihe thako, vane thako, sadahari bole thako. Thakur Bhakti Vinod has prayed that whether you are a grihastha living in your house, or whether you are a sannyasi living in the jungle, if you are truly taking shelter of Krishna's name, there's no difference. Wherever the glorification of Krishna's name and the seva of the Lord is taking place amongst selfless devotees, that place is Vaikuntha. It is the spiritual world. But Dhritarashtra, due to his attachment to a son who was envious of Krishna and envious of Krishna's devotees, he had burning greed in his heart. Duryodhana wanted to be the king of the earth. He could not tolerate anyone being equal to or better than him. Bhima was a stronger fighter than Duryodhana from their childhood, and Duryodhana hated anyone who was better than him. And Yudhisthira was more popular and trusted by the citizens than Duryodhana. And because of this, Duryodhana hated him. In material life, if someone surpasses us in whatever we're good at and proud of, we want to destroy those persons. It is our greatest pleasure to see their downfall. Even in spiritual circles, we find this. If someone surpasses us in recognition, or surpasses us in learning, or surpasses us in renunciation, or surpasses us in doing better whatever we do best and whatever people recognize us for, we become terribly envious. And our great pleasure is when they make a mistake, or when they fall from their position. This is envy. Ultimately, it is envy of Krishna. Because none of your attributes or anyone else's attributes is yours. It is all Krishna's. Krishna can manifest his beauty, his excellences, wherever he wants. Who are we to tell Krishna it must be through me, not him or her? We should bow down to Krishna wherever he's bestowing his mercy through, or whoever he's bestowing his mercy through. We should know that every devotee is only an instrument in the hands of Krishna. And we all must just sincerely and humbly do our part for Krishna and be happy and be content and live together in love and trust. That is Krishna consciousness. But due to the influences of material existence, we have this envious nature within our hearts. And Duryodhana was the personification of this quality. He hated the Pandavas. They were his own cousins. Not only that, but they loved him and they were his well-wishers. They would do anything for him. And they proved it on so many occasions. Whenever he was in some difficulty, they would come and protect him, to save him, without asking anything in return. And that only made him more angry and more envious, because they had such good qualities. So sad. But Dhritarashtra, because he was under the illusion that this is my son, he could not restrain himself from obeying his son's fastidious commands. Dhritarashtra knew in his heart of hearts that he was wrong. He was the symbol of so many people in this world today. He knew he was wasting his life. He knew he was offending God and his devotees. He knew Duryodhana was wrong, and that if he followed him, he would have to suffer bitter reactions. He knew it. But because of that attachment, he could not restrain himself. Sometimes in Mahabharata we read that Dhritarashtra himself would tell Duryodhana, "The Pandavas, they're so nice. They're wonderful. They love me. They respect me. They love you and respect you. Why are we doing this? Let's give them some land. Let's treat them respectfully." He would preach to his son like this. But Duryodhana knew the weakness of Dhritarashtra. He knew he was attached to him too much. And therefore, Duryodhana was able to exploit him. He would come back and say, "Father, if you think like this, or if you speak like this, or if you act in any way in relationship to this line of thought, then I will leave you forever, or I will commit suicide. I cannot tolerate them. I hate them. And if you don't support me, then I cannot maintain my life." And Dhritarashtra, heartbroken by these words, he said, "All right, Duryodhana, whatever you say." Duryodhana was Maya, the illusory energy. We should know that Maya is the energy of Krishna. To keep those who are insincere in the repetition of birth and death, and to help those who are sincere out of the repetition of birth and death. And Maya knows exactly from within and without what is our greatest weaknesses. Better than you know. And she'll go right to that weakness, right to the core of whatever material attachment may be. And she will instigate threat and fear in your heart of losing that attachment. And by doing so, she will keep you enslaved and imprisoned by her influence, because we don't want to lose it. People who are attached are afraid. Duryodhana was so afraid. The Pandavas were living in the forest. He had complete power and control over the whole world, but he was still in anxiety because he was afraid. And Dhritarashtra was living in constant fear. What is the use of having all this? They were miserable. But people of this world, they can't see. They're accumulating so much and so much and so much. The more you have, the more you're afraid of losing. And the more you're afraid, the more miserable you are. And the more miserable you are, what is the use of all the things you have if all they're bringing you is misery? But Maya is so powerful that we can't even see this reality that is manipulating our whole life. This was the condition of Dhritarashtra. He was indulging in activities that he knew was ruining his life. But Maya was so strong. And she will do the same thing to us. If we are too much attached to anything in this world, then Maya will create a fear of losing that attachment. And on the basis of that fear, she will control us. Even against our own good conscience. Vairagya vidya nija bhakti yoga shikshashtame ka purusha purana. Therefore, in order to live this human life properly, we must cultivate detachment. Vairagya. Detachment means anything that is unfavorable for devotional service to God, we must reject. And anyone that is unfavorable, we must reject. And anything and anyone that is favorable to the execution of my devotional service to the Lord should be accepted. Srila Rupa Goswami has given us these two cardinal principles. Accept what is favorable for devotional service and reject what is unfavorable. Akrura's words here are favorable. Duryodhana's words are unfavorable. But due to attachment, Dhritarashtra cannot give it up. And tomorrow, in these blessed pages of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we will read the most illustrious and enlightening words of Dhritarashtra's reply to Akrura's appeal. In his reply, he is going to explain, I know everything you're saying is right. I know Krishna's God. I know I should surrender to him. I know what my son's doing and why he's doing it. But I'm helpless. I can't give it up. Arrivo! So these beautiful prayers we will begin tomorrow. Is there any questions? Yes.
In the course of our grihastha life, we always been told by the higher authorities that whatever you are doing it, you are doing as a service to Krishna. Whatever business you might be doing it, give everything as a charity to Krishna consciousness to the maximum you can. And wife and house and whatever you have it, give it as a service. Just see that Krishna is in control and you have to do just, you have to serve Krishna on that basis. Now, we just go out on that basis altogether. And as Bhaktivinoda Thakur also says, my house is just like Golok Vrindavan and I have this type of association with all of them. But then, Maharaj, why is it so? Is it not so that after certain age of life, although you might be doing service to Krishna by doing all these activities, in a subtle level in your heart, sense gratification is there in your heart. That's why we have gone into grihastha life. What's the need of going in a grihastha life? So that could be the reason. So in a subtle level, there is some sense gratification motive is there in our heart. So is it not so that although we might be doing our services into Krishna consciousness by doing all these activities, one day or the other, we have to leave everything, although it might be a service to Krishna, and accept the renounced order of life, although it is a service. Because otherwise, why Bhakti Vinod Thakur also left everything and become a sannyasi? Otherwise, he on the first side, he is saying that grihe tako vane tako, and other side, he is taking a sannyas also. Then what is the use of it? So is it not so that one day or the other, we have to leave it? So then why is it so that we always say that grihe tako vane tako? One day or other, we have to go away from all these activities and take a renounced order. Saying this thing, doing the service. So can you just clarify?
For Bhakti Vinod Thakur, there was no need to take sannyas. He did it only as an example for us. But for those who are attached to material enjoyment, by following the rules and regulations of the grihastha life, gradually these material attachments become less and less. And ultimately, as we develop more and more attachment for Krishna, for His devotees, and for His loving service, all of these material attachments vanish. By the execution of grihastha ashram properly, this is what takes place. Do you think that every brahmachari is a completely liberated soul with no material desires? The brahmachari ashram is for those who are obviously on a higher level of detachment, generally. But still they have material desires. But by following the rules and regulations of brahmacharya, gradually one becomes more and more attached to Krishna and less attached to material sense and gratification. Generally, the grihastha ashram is for those who have a much stronger degree of material desires. They would be very unhappy and miserable trying to be brahmacharis. So there is rules and regulations in that ashram as well. By following carefully and having nice association with sadhus, gradually that grihastha becomes free of all of these material attachments, even while living amongst them, by using them for Krishna. A grihastha has some sanction for material enjoyment. But he dovetails that sanction in proper spiritual direction and gradually becomes purified. And at a certain stage of life, when we are completely purified, like Bhakti Vinod, he carried on his duties as a grihastha in that purified state. And when the children are grown and Krishna directs us through the spiritual master that we can better serve him in the renounced order, then for the sake of devotion, for the sake of seva, we may renounce everything and accept vanaprastha or sannyas. You see, on the path of bhakti, the various ashrams certainly are for the purification and elevation according to particular person's capacity. But even more than that, the various ashrams facilitate different varieties of service, each needed within this society. There is a need for pure devotee grihasthas. And there is a need for pure devotee sannyasis and brahmacharis. And together, like a body, we all work together for the welfare of humanity in the service of God. Hmm? that answer your question? But you should know that even as a grihastha, although you have some sanction for material enjoyment, as explained in Bhagavatam, dharmasya hyapavargyasya naratatau yapakalpate. Do not be attached to those sanctions. Or they will become the cause of our downfall. We must use the facilities we have in our household life in such a way, under the supervision of sadhus, that we can become detached even while living amongst them, by seeing that it is all meant for Krishna, not for me. That is the purification in which we must evolve in Grihastha Ashram. That nothing is mine. It is all for Krishna. In the story, a story of Ramanujacharya, there was one Grihastha man. His name was Danwar Das. He was a very handsome, strong man, terribly attached to his wife. One time he was in a parade. There was a parade going, Srirangam, the Vijay Murti was going through the streets of Srirangam. And there were so many sadhus and so many devotees. And he was just holding an umbrella over his wife, who was very, very beautiful, to keep the sun from her, and his eyes were completely fixed only on his beautiful wife. And it was so obvious that people all around were thinking, this man, the deity is coming by, all the sadhus are coming by, and he's just looking at his wife. He's just serving his wife. So Ramanujacharya told one of his disciples, you get this Danwar Das, bring him here. So he came. He said, why are you always looking at your wife like this? Don't you see? He said, she's the most beautiful thing in all of the creation. How can anyone not look at her? And Ramanuja said, if I show you someone more beautiful, will you stop looking at her? He said, yes. And so Ramanujacharya brought him to the beautiful Murti of Ranganath in the temple. And by the mercy of Ramanuja, he was able to actually experience the beauty. And then he fell down at Ramanuja's feet and said, I am surrendered to you, I will be your disciple. And then his wife came, and she also surrendered, and they became wonderful grihasthas. They had their home, they had all the facilities of a grihastha, but they were always humbly engaged in the loving service of their guru together. And Ramanujacharya was giving very special attention to the two of them. So his sannyasi disciples were very upset. They were actually criticizing their guru to themselves in a subtle way, thinking, we're Brahmins, we're sannyasis, brahmacharis. He's not even a Brahmin. He's living with this beautiful woman. He has a house, he has furniture, and yet Ramanuja is giving him more attention than us. This is not correct. So what Ramanujacharya did is one day, all these sannyasis had was their kopans. That's all they have was their kopans. So one day, they had two sets of kopans and they would hang them up after washing them. So Ramanuja had someone go in and mix up the kopans and tear them up a little. So the next day when these brahmacharis and sannyasis went to put on their kopans, they saw, somebody ripped my kopan, somebody stole my kopan, and they were all arguing with one another and accusing one another and chastising one another. Why you stole my kopan? Why you did this to my kopan? It was like a warfare in the brahmachari ashram. So that night, next night, Ramanuja called his brahmacharis and sannyasis and said, you know, this Dhanurdas, this grihastha, he's too much attached to material enjoyment. Let's expose him. Yes, yes. Correct, correct. Let's expose him. He said, I will call Dhanurdas in the middle of the night to meet with me. And while I'm away, I want you to steal all the beautiful jewelry off his wife. And then when he goes back, we'll see how attached they are to their jewelry. Yes, yes, Gurudev, your order is our life and soul. So they called Dhanurdas. One brahmachari went. Dhanurdas, in the middle of the night, Ramanuj wants to meet you, something very important. He said to his wife that, I must go, Gurudev is calling. He left. While he was with Ramanuja, some of the brahmacharis and sannyasis went to his sleeping wife, who had all these beautiful golden jewelries, and they started taking it off her. And they thought she was sleeping, but actually she was awake. So they took everything off one side of her. So then she turned to the other side, but they thought she was waking up, so they ran away. So they went back, Ramanuja, we have the jewelry. Okay, now I will send Dhanurdas back, and now you can secretly look through the windows and see what kind of anxiety they're in when he sees his wife without her jewelries. So they were peeking, and Dhanurdas came home, and he said, Mataji, where is your jewelry? She said, oh, these devotees, these sannyasis and brahmacharis, they must be so poor. They must be so poor that they need money so bad to serve their guru that they came to take my jewelry. I was considering this is a great honor. So they took all from one side, and just to make it easy, I turned over so that they could take from the other side, but they ran away. And Dhanurdas chastised his wife. You rascal. He said, you had such an opportunity to serve these great brahmacharis and sannyasis, to give them what you had. Why you turned in such a way that you scared them away? If you had any real intelligence, you would have turned in such a way that they would have taken everything we have. That would have been our greatest fortune. So the brahmacharis and sannyasis, they went back and reported what was said to Ramanuja, and Ramanuja said, ah, you see, he's living in a house, he has a beautiful wife, but he's willing to give anything in the service of Gurudev. He's not attached. But you're so attached to your kopins that you're all fighting above them. And they became very embarrassed, and they realized that actually he is more detached than us. And they became very humble. In this way, we must know that Krishna does not see what ashram we're in. Krishna sees the quality of our consciousness, our willingness to serve, our willingness to give anything or everything when it's needed in our Gurudev's service. That's what Krishna sees. Srila Prabhupada used to say that in Krishna consciousness we have to be detached. Whether we're living in a palace or whether we're living under a tree. If we're attached to our palace, that is material. And if we're attached to our little piece of earth under a tree, that is also material. If Krishna wants you to live in a palace, you should not be attached to your tree. And if Krishna wants you to live under a tree, you should not be attached to your palace. That is real renunciation. Just be attached to Krishna's devotees, to Krishna's seva, and most of all to Krishna's holy name. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Ram Ram. Any other questions?